This episode of the Golf Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Cut. Cut is the peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. And Underdog Fantasy, play their pick them for a chance to win 100 times your money in NBA, MLB, college, basketball, golf, and more. Sign up today using promo code GOLFSGPN to get 100% deposit match. We're also brought to you by the premier arbitrage sports betting tool, AV. Yo, use their tool to bet both sides and lock in a profit. Access their platform for free at arbsvsodds.com. So arbsvsodds.com. Plus, in honor of Masters Week, we are giving away a TaylorMade Spider X putter for free. Go enter over at sportsgamingpodcast.com/. All right, D-Gens, it's the best week of the year. It's Masters Week, baby. It's your boy Boston Cap with the God of Golf himself, Steve Shermer. Steve, it's Masters Week, baby.
It is, and it's made a little more special the fact that you and I are going to be there in 5 days.
5 days.
I'll do it this way.
4 days and really four days in a wake up. Not even 3 days in a wake up because we'll be there on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll be there Thursday night. Where we'll go
4 days in a wake.
Yeah, we'll go. We'll be there Thursday night. We'll probably go to like Outback Steakhouse because that's probably going to be the only place that's not jam packed with people at that point. But
blue onion.
Yes, but Friday we will be walking through the pearly gates of Augusta National. I will be probably humming and singing the Willy Wonka theme song to you because it truly is the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory of golf courses. It's going to be absolutely special. I can't wait to see your face. Yeah, just go in there. It's going to be great. And you know, I'm glad we're doing this right now early because I'm fairly certain Akshay is going to ruin our day today and ruin everybody's day because he's a big community bet. And I want to talk about the Masters with a positive, happy mindset before getting absolutely kicked in the nuts in approximately like 5 or 6 hours. So
yeah, I will say I am happy that it didn't go as we both thought it was going to go yesterday. And it was definitely doing that on the front nine. I was like, oh, I mean, we called it to the stroke. Like, here he goes. He's going to go plus two. Is going to be a two or three stroke lead. So birdieing on 18, like after two, really not a great drive. And then not a great second shot was pretty nice.
Yeah. That was. I mean, after he had to wait 45 minutes on the tee box for all of Jordan Spieth's nonsense at that point.
Unbelievable.
Go ahead. What's your take about what happened?
It's so ridiculous. Like you said it better than I did. I was like, yeah, there's no way there shouldn't be a penalty. Like, you shouldn't be able to hit it on the fucking clubhouse roof because you know you're going to get a free drop. Like you said, at that point, you're not playing golf anymore. Like, it's ridiculous. It's so dumb. We have some of the dumbest rules. You can do that, but you can't move a ball out of a fucking random divot in the middle of the fairway. But feel free to hit it into the gutter to get a free drop. Makes no fucking sense.
I know. It's just and it completely held up play. Like I was feeding my kid at this point. I'm like, and I didn't have it on. I was like, why hasn't Akshay teed off? And then I was looking like, why hasn't Rory teed off? And I was looking, I'm like, why is like Matthias or why is Webb Simpson like just on the green right now, like four groups ahead? And then the text started flying about how much Jordan Spieth was just wasting everybody's time. And that's the problem. Like, when you have rules like this, the TIO stuff, then you got to bring in a rules official. You got to explain through. They got to make sure they drop it correctly.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. It held a play, and just two prime examples of that. Listen, like, it going to a drain, I get it. Like,
yeah,
fine. You get a free drop from that. Same thing if it goes into a sprinkler head around the green, that's fine. But him purposely aiming, just not even aiming for the green, trying to make a good shot, just aiming for an object, knowing he's going to get a free drop. Like, again, like you said, it's not golf at that point.
And he even asked the ref where he was going to get the free drop. He's like, if I hit it here, where's my drop going to be? Like, that's right. So ridiculous. Like, unbelievable. Right.
I mean, I'm glad he'd still end up getting double bogey. Like, if he had a par in that hole, that would have been ridiculous.
Yeah, the golf gods weren't letting him par that hole.
That's fine. I mean, like, you know, Spieth, and we're, you know, going into this week's of the Masters, obviously he's going to be a big story, and you know, probably, you know, with all his success, he probably should have three green jackets at this point. Just a lot of sloppiness in his game. And you know, even though we talk about how wide a lot of these fairways are, and you know, with a guy like Spieth with a lot of experience, if you know where to miss it, it's manageable. But sloppiness just gets really punished at Augusta National, And yeah. like it's, I'm while the highs have been pretty good for Spieth, just seeing these knuckleheaded holes just still in them, like that's going to end up costing him at some point. And, you know, I wasn't really too impressed with him. Wasn't impressed with Morikawa. That was another guy I wanted to see do a little better this week, and he has been pretty bad.
Yep.
Home has been okay. Rory's doing a little better. He's building some momentum there. Ludvig building some momentum too. Hideki coming on strong. So those are three guys probably going to the Masters. You know, I have a little higher hopes for at this point. I already had high hopes for Hideki, but Rory, I think, was mm-hmm. what I needed to see something for. Anybody else you saw, you know, this week that is maybe piquing your interest a little more based on what happened to Valero or at Liv Miami?
No, definitely fucking Liv Miami. Thanks, Brooks. I didn't even check to see how it ended yesterday. Where did he end up at?
I think he ended up at plus one, T35.
Recovered a little bit, but
that's
sloppy play. Sloppy play. DJ looks all right. DJ still looks fine.
DJ looks fine.
Yeah.
Bryson was doing okay, and then he made a boneheaded double.
I'm never betting Bryson at Augusta. Ever.
Well, I mean, we'll see how he does in the elimination game later. Maybe you'll change your mind on him.
I will not. We know. We've been through this exercise with Bryson. Like the flat lies, like forget about it. Like the single length irons with the not a flat lie in the place, he struggles. He just struggles.
He does. So, all right. Where do you want to go from here? Do you want me to just get right into the Google Earth?
Yeah, let's do the Google Earth. But hey, let's pimp our Potter giveaway. So we're giving away a TaylorMade Spider X Potter. Super easy, guys. All you gotta do is go to sportsgamepodcast.com/masters to enter. It takes 30 seconds. It's a great putter. It takes 2 seconds. Go do it. We love giving away these nice high end clubs come Masters times to make everybody's week, man. So, Sean and Ryan are gonna be in San Diego to attend a special Circus Sports watch party starting Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock at Swing Social. Free drinks for anyone wearing Cubs or Padres gear. Grab a cocktail and say a what's up. All right, let's get into Google Earth, baby.
That's pretty fun. All right, let's pull up the greatest golf course, the greatest golf experience you will ever have.
I know, it's great.
In your entire life, you are going to go to TPC Sawgrass next year and be like, this place is a cow pasture. This is like when you see these facilities. So this is Augusta National. And if you guys have been watching these preview shows this year, I've spent a lot of time on Google Earth, really going to a lot of the holes and describing like what the challenges are, what you gotta look for. I'm going to be perfectly honest, guys. First of all, if you're watching this at 11 a.m. right now, you're probably a true golf hardcore junkie. And if you actually like these types of previews where we go really in the weeds with this stuff, you already know what Augusta National is going to offer to you. You already know what skill sets really, it's values. You know what you got to do well there. You know all the holes pretty much. So, I mean, I will kick it back to my co-host here right here since I'm going to make you do a little bit of work since you know Augusta National. What's some of your favorite holes on the golf course?
Obviously, Rays Creek. Because it snatches so many souls, then those, you know that. Even though he snatched many of my souls, mostly Francisco. Like I had him everywhere in DraftKings. It was looking like I was going to cash like a big weekend between that and the bets. And yeah, his soul's still there, man. It's just it makes for great golf, man. Sunday, it's just exciting. You know what I mean? Like, and I even thinking about when. Scotty was running away with it. Cam still had an outside hope chance going into 12, and then he fucking hit it way long, and you knew he was dead.
I think it was on three where really it turned. Because remember, I think Scotty bogeyed one, and he parred two, and Cam went birdie, and chipped in from here, and Cam bogeyed, and that was basically it. But yeah, so I mean, actually, come to think of it, I have all these markers. I probably should put Francesco Molinari's grave site.
That'd be fucking right great. Here. You do that. Yeah,
you do. Yeah, I mean, so you can actually see the memorial for Francesco all the way to the Pine Street. They got the Italian flag and everything there. A big picture of Francesco's face here. It's even a replica of the Clara Juggy one, just to kind of remind you that he was a great golfer until he really tragically died.
What a heater he was on. And that literally he disappeared after that. Every time I see him, I chuckle. I'm like,
he was the best player in the world from like May 2018 till that happened. Because remember, he had the 2018 Ryder Cup where he went 5-0 there too. He won the Open and he won Bay Hill before the Masters as well. Yeah. So he was just rolling. And it just, Tiger Woods, the greatest player on earth, just said, you know what? I can't have this. You tiny little Italian. Get off my turf. I'm going to win this. But this is Augusta National. So here's what we're going to do. So there's been a lot of changes to Augusta the last couple of years. I'm just going to go over the big changes. I'm going to show you what it looked like, what it looks like now. I'm going to talk about a little bit of some scoring implications, how things changed. There's been a lot of reactions to some stuff. Like there was a big reaction the first year to pushing back hole 15 and what it did. We'll talk about that a little bit, sort of the implications. Before I get to the golf course, though, I'm just going to show Boston Capper just to get him really excited here. So this road is where we're going to come down.
Yes.
And we're probably going to park somewhere in here. And this is the front gate. Basically, it's like Disney World here. They're going to put you through the metal detector. There's SWAT guys with M16s ready to gun down anybody, flak jackets, everything. But then you're going to meander down the road here. And about when you see the greatest practice facility you've ever laid eyes on, that's when it's finally going to start hitting you. Like, I'm here. I'm at Golf Disney World. This right here, this is where the merchandise tent is. The UPS stores right here. There's a concession stand and a couple tables over in the woods here. My dad and I used to sit here and eat an egg sandwich before we got off. But everybody's going to congregate here.
Yeah,
it's on the north end. And once the gates open about 6:30, it's just a mad dash. It's like ants just getting onto the golf course there. And then you basically just pick your spot where you want to sit. A lot of people rush to 18 because they want to put their chairs there or on 9. This is actually a really good viewing spot here. When we went, we rushed all the way to the second green because you can see it. If you park yourself on 2, you see guys coming down, play the second green. You can turn around, you see guys play 7, tee off on 3, and tee off on 8. So this is a really good central location. There's concession stands over here and a bathroom as well.
All right.
So a lot of people want to go to Amen Corner. Yeah. And there's a south entrance here, but you're just away from everything and you're all just jammed here. It's now you can get to 13 tee here. You can't get to the 11th green. So while it's good to look at, it might not be the best viewing spot because everybody's going to want to congregate to here.
Okay.
So, but we'll talk about that maybe at the end with the fan experience, but let's start with some changes first to Augusta National. So the only big major change they've done this year was pushing back the tee box on hole number 2. So before, the tee box was about here. It played at, 575 yards down the hill. They moved it back into the left JFK style to about here. And they just added 10 yards to the hole. And I saw a quote from Rory saying, is that really going to change the hole is, especially the viewing, because it looks like from the tee, everyone's hitting towards the bunker.
Yeah.
But he said when he looked at it, they probably cut down some trees and maybe open up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change the hole visually. You still got to hit a right to left shot, draw down here. It's now 322 to the bunker, which, downhill, if you get a helping wind, you could get it there. But all they did was just lengthen the hole. They changed the green a little bit too, but that's not really impactful for handicap purposes. That's really the only major change they made this year. They made a couple tweaks to the greens on 4 and 6 as well. Again, not really all that impactful, but it's just something noteworthy. Another major change they've made to the golf course the last couple of years was on hole number 5. This was a huge change. This was a huge lengthening. So let's go back in time. I'll show you what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to 2017. All right. So where the tee box is now, that used to be just a field.
Right.
And the tee box is up here. The bunkers were pushed all the way up. And they wanted to basically make this more a modern, because this hole, when it was first built, was like the road hole at St. Andrews, where you want to play closer to the bunkers over here. And this green, how it's contoured, is more receptive to where it's a shorter iron versus a longer shot. Whereas, you could bail out right, kind of like with the road hole away from the hotel, but you have a longer approach shot into a green that basically is not very, you can't hold it with a longer iron. Well, with today's advancement in modern technology, they're basically blowing past these bunkers here. It just wasn't playing how it was. So they pushed back the tee box like 30 yards and they pushed the bunkers up. They pushed the bunkers back. But now this is 285 to get to the first bunker, 306 to get to the second bunker. And that is very accessible for these guys. And it's, you know, if you pull off a really good tee shot, it's like 170 yards into one of the craziest greens you're probably going to see. I can't wait to see the green.
I know. I can't wait to see the greens in person. I'm sorry.
Yeah. When I show you the first green, you're going to be just dumbfounded at this place. I think the first green is one of the wildest greens on the golf course. It's going to be unbelievable showing it. But the fifth green, it looks like there's a minivan parked right in the front here. And then, it basically slopes pretty, there's a low, this is a little lower down here, but it's crazy undulated. And again, if you play out all the way to the right here, you can bail out, but it's a really long approach shot into the green. If you are in these bunkers, though, they're so deep, it's dead.
Dead.
You cannot get to the green. So this is one of the tougher holes. I think this is, besides 11, the toughest hole on the golf course. It plays really, really mean. Let's go to hole number 11. That was another one that they made a lot of big changes, like significant ones. Let's swing around this way so I can show you, and we'll go the overhead here. Okay. And then, let's go back in time. So, before they really wanted to tiger-proof this place, it was pretty wide open. Hole number 17. Like, you could go all the way down to the right. This was all fairway. And one of the ways they wanted to tiger-proof it was they wanted to add a bunch of pine trees, basically make more, to try and promote driving accuracy, where all that did was just basically make it easier for Tiger Woods just dominate here for years and years because he's just the best driver. He was hitting longer and straighter than everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this hole basically became very one-dimensional. You would always see guys just play down the left here, basically bail left. Don't even be towards these pine trees because that's, then you got hit under pine trees, and the angle coming back into the green here, if it's on the ground, you run it basically into the water here. If you're over on the left, you see guys basically bail out to the right, trying to get up and down. Well, they wanted to try and promote and encourage guys to go down the right there. So what they end up doing was they end up cutting down a lot of these pine trees over here. Well, first of all, they push back the tee box. They cut down a lot of the pine trees here. This is all fairway over here, except for three trees here.
Uh-huh.
And the goal was kind of like with the fifth hole I showed you. They want you to play as close to these pine trees as possible to give you a really good angle into the green here versus if you bail left now and they made the green side surround here a little more severe. There's more mounding over here now. Uh-huh. It's a little hard to get up and down. Basically, they want to make it a little more punishing to like delay the penalty.
Right.
Well, sure, you can play away from this trouble over here, but you're probably not going to hit the green, or at best, you're probably going to get here and try get your two-putt on a very difficult green, or you're going to miss the green trying to get up and down. But the risk going this way is, let's play it, seeing it's a little firm, it's fairway. Now, let's say you push your tee shot a little too far right here, you got to deal with these trees here, and you're hitting back, probably a low shot under the branches where, again, once it hits the ground and everything slopes towards the pond here, a little riskier. Yep. But when I saw it, because I parked myself about right here trying to see, like, all right, how are these guys playing? I didn't really notice a big difference with how it was playing. Now, the turf was pretty soft, so it was harder for the ball to kind of roll into this area right here. But I am going back and looking at how the scoring average changed, because a big thing that was a complaint about this hole was it was just basically there was no opportunity for birdies.
Yeah.
Basically just a lot of pars and bogeys. So I went back. So from 2017, 2021, they made this change for the 2022 Masters. From 2017, 2021, the average score was 4.35. The birdie percentage was only 5.4%. And the bogey plus percentage was 35%.
Jesus.
Last 2 years, scoring average was only 4.38, so it was only about 0.03 shots different. Mm-hmm. Didn't really change it there. The birdie rate actually went down to 4.5%, and the bogey rate stayed at 34%. So it didn't really do anything.
Right.
What it was probably, I think what they were trying to do is maybe promote more birdies on the hole and more bogeys, like less pars.
Right.
Because that's basically what this hole kind of was. has not played out that way. Now, if we get maybe firmer conditions where, you know, the ball can maybe roll a little bit more this way, or maybe you try and encourage guys to maybe go a little bit more, push more to the right.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll change how they wanted to play. But I just think just how this hole is designed, it's just a long par four, difficult. I just think it's going to be just like, you know, get your par and get out of there at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Was it crowded over there where you were at?
That's the thing. No one was standing over here.
Yeah.
So so the rope line was right here and everybody, you know, basically was hitting to about here. I could see all the approach shots basically into the green here. So you couldn't see the tee shots because you can't get back here anyways.
Fine.
You know, this is all blocked up, but you could see, but here, no one was here because everybody's up at Amen Corner up here. Everyone's usually trying to get to like 15 and 16 as well.
Yeah,
it's pretty much a dead part of the property at this point.
Nice.
So, and yeah, there's a concession stand over here, there's bathrooms as well. It's actually not a bad place to park yourself for the tournament. Maybe sometimes, you know, we can think about when we're going there. All right, it's 13th. Again, highly controversial. They end up pushing back the tee box, like I think 15, 20 yards or so. And this has been a little polarizing as far as if players have liked it or not. Some players have really liked it. Some players thought the hole was kind of boring because you could really just take it all the way over the trees here and set up, you know, about like a 170-yard shot into a green here. Yeah. Other players don't like it. They don't like the fact they got to hit longer irons into the green. They feel like they can't go for it. You know, those are more the mentally soft golfers, I feel like, have said that. But, you know, as far as how it actually impacted scoring, it made it more difficult. It made it less easy to make a birdie or better. So last year, the birdie rate was only 42%. In 2017, 2020, it was about 47%. So, you know, it basically has forced guys into a decision of, you know, now they're holding a 5-iron, 6-iron for most guys into this green here. And, you know, it's either maybe lay up to the right, trying to get up down with a wedge. And also the bogey percentage was higher. It was 14% last year versus only 11% historically. Nice. So I think this is probably a good change. It definitely the weather helped a little bit last year as far as, you know, over the weekend it played really tough. And the wind direction kind of shifted to where it was more difficult to hit birdies, which we'll talk about when we talk about weather and scoring. But I think this is a good move. I think that just how the 2023 tournament played out, they wanted it to make it a little more difficult to make birdie. And they want to make it a little more, you know, put the more of a decision in the player's hands if they want to actually go for it into make it more of a monumentous decision. Like I remember watching the 96 Masters and Nick Faldo, you know, he had 210 into the green and he was debating whether he wanted to hit a 3-wood, which shows how far the ball just, you know, goes now where, you know, he's debating where he wanted to hit 3-wood or if he wanted to lay up, and he was agonizing over it. And he finally pulled wedge and laid up there. And they wanted to kind of bring that back into it. Because, you know, if you got the right winds here, this is, you're basically playing into the west here. If you got a western wind, you know, that's a big decision. You know, trying to get it 220, 230 into the wind with the tributary to Race Creek here. It's tough.
I like it.
All right, 15.
Is there a spot?
Fine. No, go for it.
Is there a spot on the backside of that green to the right where we can watch?
No.
We can't get across the right.
No,
can't get across.
So you cannot get all of this right here is inaccessible.
Okay.
This is mostly inaccessible here because they're just driving into it. Everybody, if you're gonna watch 13, you basically congregate here. Or there's a grandstand over here.
I don't like grandstands.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, that's why Amen Corner is great to look at.
Yeah.
Not really a great visual experience because you're so far away from the action. So, you know.
Okay.
But we'll get a game plan when we go there. Okay. 15. This was one that in 2022, when they moved back to tee box, actually kind of upset some people. You know, before with 15, it's all right, you're going for into the monumental decision. Like, you know, you can get eagle or you can see the ball roll back in the water here. And what ended up happening in 2022 was the birdie rates ended up plummeting for the tournament. So from 2017 to 2021, it was a 43% birdie rate and only a 13% bogey rate. In 2022, the birdie rate went down to 26%. And the booger rate only stayed at 17%. So it basically became mostly pars.
Yep.
And they blamed it on the fact, well, it's just way too long. The problem that year was, and I was there, it was brutally cold.
Yep.
It was 55 degrees on Saturday, and you had this northwest wind was into the player's face. Of course, they're not going to go for it at that point.
Yeah.
So flash forward to 2023, at least for the first couple of rounds, and even on Sunday, too, the wind wasn't quite as much. Now, all of a sudden, you saw guys score better because they were actually able to go for the green and two. So last year, the birdie rate or the scoring average was 4.65. Birdie rate went back up to 46%. Bogey rate only 9%. So they made it a little longer, but it went back to exactly how you remembered it last year. And you just need certain weather conditions in order to get it. And that's probably what this, lengthening it probably added in is where if you get adverse weather conditions, now, no, it's not just automatically go for it in two. Now you have to make a decision.
Yeah.
So I think, again, they basically, looking back at the decision to lengthen it, I think it was pretty justified. So, but that's it. I mean, like I said, if you've watched these previews over the years, I've been doing this for, I think this is my sixth Masters preview I've done. There's plenty of content out there. You've watched the Masters, you know what all these holes provide. But those are just the holes where things have changed over the last couple of years. That's how it's impacted or not. Overall, this is just a really long, difficult golf course now, even really easy conditions. And when we get to the weather conditions, it can get really, really mean in certain stuff.
Love it. All right. Before we break anything else down, talk to you guys about Cut. Cut is the peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. It's a new and better way to bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes. Plus, tons of social features give you the feel of a social network, lower VIG, and fully customizable odds. Plus, they handle the payment side of things, so you never have to chase anybody for money. Group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. Plus, you get cash back every single time you bet against your friends or other users. So I'm sure there's going to be a ton of Tiger bets on Cut this week. So maybe we'll take a look at those on the betting show on Tuesday. So download Cut today in the App Store or over at cut.com. That's K-U-T-T. And use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. And Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports, and it's the fastest growing app in the industry. Pick'em game is the way to go. You got to go higher or lower. Greens and regulations, total birdies, strokes, whatever they're offering, and you win 100 times. You win 100 times your money in a single round. Plus, 2 to 5, you can pick between 2 and 5 players to build a pick'em entry, as well as rivals where you can pick 2 players against each other. So, sign up today with promo code GOLFSGPN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit UnderdogFantasy.com. We'll find in the App Store. And don't forget to register with promo code GOLFSGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 plus and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Conservative play. Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit ncbgambling.org. All right. What are we talking about now?
All right. We are going to zoom through a lot of stuff I usually spend a lot of time on, like the predictive skill set chart, the intermittent strokes gain variance, because again, if you've been betting the Masters for years, you already know. And honestly, like once I show you like what skill sets it favors,
yeah, we know
it favors just the best players. That's it. And if you're just playing good, so again, so the GCSA report, this was built by Alistair McKenzie and Bobby Jones in 1933. This has received a bunch of renovations over the years. Robert Trent Jones did work with it through the years, I think in the 70s. Tom Fazio now is the chief architect of Augusta National now. A lot of his fingerprints are on this golf course now. But they've started to actually move a little bit away from the Tom Fazio stuff. I think Fred Ridley wanted to, they've been undergoing more of like a fairway expansion project to get rid of some of that intermediate rough cut that Fazio put in to try and tiger-proof the place. They've cut down a little bit more trees as well. They're trying to get back to more of like the wide-open nature of it, with still trying to retain its tough, elements that Fazio really put into it.
Right.
Par 72, 7,545 yards now. That is a beast.
Beast.
Of a of golf course, and especially if you get cold and windy conditions, this place can play extremely long. 6,500 square feet is the average green size, but as you're going to see with how crazy undulated these greens are, the targets are very small.
Yep.
At these places, and there's a very fine line between a really good shot and a really bad shot. It's, you know, you really have to have precision around the green and with your iron shots if you want to do well here. That is why basically the best players in the world just tend to elevate themselves at Augusta National. As far as agronomy goes, these are bent grass greens, very fast bent grass greens with sub air underneath the greens. Also, what I found out when I went there, there is in fact sub air underneath parts of the fairway, not the entire fairway, but in low laying areas where water can collect, there in fact is sub air. Now, it's not going to make it completely bone dry. It makes it playable though. Like, you know, the 2022 Masters I went to, I was pressing my thumb into the soil there. It still was pretty soft. But it does help it make it a little more playable, a little more speedy. If you receive a lot of rain, instead of just like you saw maybe like TPC Sawgrass a couple of weeks ago, or you know, other golf courses where a drive just hits the turf and it just goes splat.
Sticks.
Yeah. Unless you receive a deluge of rain, which sometimes we have.
Yep.
You're going to get some rollout. Not as much as some years, but you're going to get some rollout. But as far as just the agronomy goes, so this is actually most of the year in the summer, a Bermuda golf course. But in the winter seasons and in April, this is a ryegrass overseed. So ryegrass overseed in the collars and approaches and tees and the fairways. Second cut of rough is 1.38 inches, which is about what it was a couple weeks ago with Memorial Park. That's why I said that was trying to simulate Augusta National conditions as close as possible, where the ryegrass overseed, not a lot of rough, crazy undulated greens, tight lies. And I think, you know, I mentioned last week, and there were a lot of guys who played it that are going to play this week. But I think if you play at the Houston Open, I think that was the right decision to try and to get yourself tuned up in tournament conditions for the Masters. As far as predictive skill set, the predictive skill set chart goes, oh, I hate it when it does this. I had it booted up and it just goes to something different. All right, let's go to Augusta National again. Okay. So as you can see from this chart, you know, basically almost every single skill set is higher correlated to success at Augusta than the average golf course.
So this is the equivalent of Madden. Touchdowns are good.
Basically, yes. Yes. First downs are great. Yeah. So if you tend to drive it really long, you have a better chance of success at Augusta National than a shorter hitter. And you know, part of that is just because of, you know, how much they've lengthened the golf course. You know, but you know, really wide corridors as well. Now I think the misperception with this place though is this suggests that the driving accuracy is not highly correlated to success as far as like a skill set, like of what you need going in. But I can attest to, you know, walking around the property, if you are really offline, like if you are really missing in the wrong areas, like into the pine trees, or you're just can't really control the trajectory, like you can really get in a lot of trouble. And that's why, and I this is revisionist history, but I was so high on Bryson, and everybody was high on Bryson in at that 2020 Masters, because you know it came out about what the crazy lines he can take going over pine trees and shortening it. And what ended up happening was when he missed, and you know that strategy can work at Augusta if you just hit it perfectly every single time, but you're not going to be perfect. It's golf, and when you miss big, you just are dead. You have no shot. Like I think about hole number one, if you blast it way right towards like the bathroom area over on the right side of the, like that's dead. Or even if you're under a pine tree on the left side, it's just a punch out of that point. Hole number 13, if you blast into the pine trees up in the pine straw there, it's an automatic layup at this point. You know, I think about hole number 17, if you hit it way right, I remember Cam Smith doing this down the stretch in 2020. He just hit a giant banana slice way right, and he was blocked out by a bunch of pine trees, and he had no shot at that point. So while you can miss at this place, you just can't miss very big. And that's the key is, you know, with driving. Like, sure, like, you know, you can blast as far as you want, but if you are really spraying it everywhere, it's going to be tough sledding for you. But just as a skill set, guys who are inaccurate can do very well there. Hello, Cam Champ. Guys who tend to hit a lot of fairways can do really well there. Hello, Russell Henley. He finished T5 last year. He's had a couple of good finishes.
He actually looks all right this weekend. Is he in the Masters?
He is in the Masters.
Because he's top five. So he gets what?
He's top 50 in the world, too.
When you top 10 at Augusta, is it they just invite you back automatically the next year regardless? Is that how that
one
works?
Yeah, it's just the next year regardless. Okay. But yeah, you know, there's a wide skill set of guys, you know, based on how well you hit fairways and not they can do well there. But if you generally hit your irons pretty good, you tend to do a little better at Augusta National. If you tend to be a little better around the green, you tend to do a little better at Augusta National. This is the one where I used to really discount this because, you know, how you do around the green, generally speaking, is not a great way to separate yourself in the leaderboard. But just going to Augusta National, I really got a better appreciation for, like, if you are struggling around the green, I'm not even going to consider you this week. You're just completely off my card because while the shots are really difficult, they're doable. And if you do it correctly, if you execute the shot you need to do around the green, you can be handsomely rewarded. But if you don't really have good control over, you know, like how crisply you clip it off the tight lies, or if you're a bad bunker player, the margin for error is very small around the green trying to get up and down. And if you're somebody who is just struggling in those areas, it's going to be very difficult for you. And when we get to the elimination game later, around the green play coming in is a big indicator as far as guys who do well and not. And we're going to eliminate a lot of guys who have been pretty sloppy around the green this year. That's something definitely to hone in on. And putting as well. I mean, if you're a little better putter, chances are you do it's a little more higher correlation because of Augusta National, but it's not all that extreme. I would probably say putting just in general, like, yes, it's very difficult to putt on these greens, but it's probably not something I'm not looking a ton at this week. This really has turned into a tee to green ball strikers golf course with how long it is and how many long approach shots you got to hit and how difficult the areas around the green are. It's that. Now, if it was really scoreable conditions, there was a lot of birdies, maybe that would elevate putting a little bit. But the last couple of Masters, we've seen really tough scoring conditions, and it was just the best ball strikers did the best. All right. How you actually separate yourself in the tournament? Again, no surprise. We're talking about tee to green. Really important. Well, how you drive it that week is more correlated to your total strokes gained than the average PGA Tour golf course. And it's also based on, you know, there's a higher correlation, how far you hit it and how accurate you hit it.
Yep.
So again, this was kind of the misnomer too, where, like, you know, you just bomb it everywhere at Augusta. Well, driving accuracy last year played a more important role in how you did off the tee that week than driving distance. I mean, both were hugely more important than the average PGA Tour golf course, but you got to drive it. Last year, you had to drive it really good. That was how it much more correlates to your total strokes gained than the average course. Iron play is the most important metric, most correlation to iron, to how you do, but it's about PGA Tour average. At least this is last year was around the green, a little more important than it typically is on, how you do versus the average tour stop. And putting is discounted. You see this, it's not a putting contest. You have to putt well at Augusta National, but that is not a way to separate yourself from everybody else. It's really through your tee to green game. We saw this also in 2022. This was similar weather conditions than the 2023 was. At least it was on the weekend. But again, the better you drove it, the better you did overall in the tournament. This was where distance was a little more important than accuracy, but you still get a little bit more of an importance in accuracy than the average PGA Tour stop. Basically, you just got to drive it really good. Bump up in iron play, bump up in around the green play. The weather was over the weekend, it was about the same last year it was in 2022. Overall, the weather was a lot worse. So I think that's why we saw a big bump in basically putting a premium on scrambling, and putting again was discounted. 2021, so this was the really firm year. And then it got a little bit of wind, and it kind of, I think, got a little cooler on Sunday. But this wasn't quite the ball strikers tournament, at least, you know, compared to like other ones. But again, you see a huge premium in how you do around the green towards your success at Augusta National. And that is why, like I just mentioned 5 minutes ago, just how important it is not to ignore how guys are doing around the green and not just look at it just at face value, but try and put in your head, like, you know, because like how you do around the green at Harbortown or John Deere doesn't really correlate to here. You kind of got to use a little bit more of, you know, go in your memory banks of either guys who you've seen do really well at Augusta National or guys you've seen do well, like chipping off of tight lies or crazy undulated greens. You kind of know just the good scramblers when you know it and the bad ones when you don't. So it's a little bit of a mix of like, all right, look at the stats. If they're struggling, you know, that's definitely a cause of concern. Or just, you just know with certain players, like I know Patrick Reed is really good around the green. Like, you know, he showed a little bit of form in Lid Miami right now.
I know.
The fact that he's doing a little better coming in, that makes me, that puts me back on the radar. Cam Smith, even though he's hitting the ball really terribly with Drew with the illness, you know, if the weather conditions are really tough, getting up in green is such a huge skill set there. Just guys like Scotty Scheffler, Rahm's really good around the green. Rory's typically really good around the green. Just it's something that you really need to keep in mind is your around the green game at the Masters. So that's the end of the regular stuff we normally do.
All right. Well, before we get into the fun stuff, the list, which is my favorite, and then whatever else we want to talk about, fan experience, good stuff, what I'm going to eat. Got to talk to you guys about AVO. We're proud to partner up with AVO, the premier sports betting arbitrage tool. If you're new to arbitrage sports betting, it's simple. Basically, betting two sides of a bet at two different sports books to lock in a profit. The AVO tool scans the sports books looking for discrepancies in the odds and then tells you how much money you need to place with each sports book and the expected profit. The tool is super easy to use, it's lightning fast, and is a big part of arbitrage sports betting. The best part of AVO is currently free to use without restrictions. That's right, completely free. Get started today at arbsversodds.com. That's arbsversodds.com. All right.
All right.
Fun stuff.
So we have two things to do. No, we have two things to do for the game. Well, one thing you like, okay?
All right.
All right. Experience at the Masters.
All right.
This list. Okay. You love this list.
I do. I love this list.
So I actually, because we're now a more visual media, I actually have from DataGolf the chart that I always reference. It's this thing right here, this little bell curve. So you can actually now see what I'm talking about instead of me just describing it. So what's unfortunate is this was written back in 2019 and they haven't updated it since, but just, this is a lot of Masters data. This is from 1995 to 2018. So this isn't really going to move the needle all that much. And based on some of the results we've seen the last couple of years, it's kind of held water. Like for example, you know, John Rahm, he was in a level jump year last year that we'll talk about. He ended up winning that year. Hideki was also close to a level jump, basically in your prime. He ended up winning. Really, who broke the mold was like Scotty Scheffler. Although I think that was his, third Masters actually.
Yep.
So why don't we get into that? So this, the bottom right here is how many Masters you've been in. So zero, I always say it's like, this your first Masters.
Yeah.
So you're not expected to do all that great in your first Masters. I mean, it's funny because, you know, we have a pretty strong debut class this year, like Wyndham Clark, Ludwig, you know, guys that have been playing extremely well, but have never played Augusta National. They're behind the eight ball based on just, it really does take a couple times around to do very well there. So, and you get a little better.
Top market is going to be interesting price. I wonder what those prices are going to be, the top debutant.
It's going to be probably Ludwig and Clark, like very close to the top there.
Yeah.
But then you have like, you know, a couple other guys.
Yeah, that's fine.
But all right. So you do a little better in your second appearance, but then by your third Masters, all of a sudden, your expected strokes gain jumps.
Yep.
This is the first level jumper. So here are the guys this year that are playing in their third Masters. Okay?
Yep.
Minwoo Lee, who already has a good finish here at Augusta National. Not playing all that great, but this is his third Masters.
Okay.
Sam Burns' third Masters.
Okay.
Now, last year, he's been playing, I mean, it hasn't been all that great the last couple tournaments. But earlier in the year, he was playing pretty well.
No.
And last year, in good weather, he was, I think, T6 heading into the weekend. So he was actually in the mix at Augusta. That's maybe something, maybe put in the memory banks a little bit.
Well, yeah, I'm writing stuff down.
Well, you're not going to write these two guys down because you don't like them.
Okay.
This is Cam Young's third Masters.
Nope.
Okay. Well, he did finish top 10 here last year. Hitting the ball great.
I'm just leaning into the bit at this point, man.
Okay. All right. This is Will Zalatoris' third Masters. Okay. All right. So then, you know, from your third Masters to about your sixth Masters, you do about the same. All right. Yep. You know, you're doing better in the field. You know, you can have some spikes here. You know, you're gradually trending up. But then your seventh year, your seventh Masters, another level jump right here. Now, last year, when we did the seventh year, guys, you basically, you got all steamy.
Oh, yeah.
And when I read the names like Rahm and Cam Smith and Siwoo and Keegan, Yeah, it was all your guys. So here's the list of guys in their seventh Masters. Somehow, this is Corey Connors' seventh Masters.
Okay.
I mean, listen, you know, he's been great at the Masters. I was actually surprised. I was like, yeah, it's Corey Connors. Like, he's actually one of the more seasoned veterans.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
It is kind of crazy. Because when you compare it to the other two guys, you would think, all right, you know, you would think these guys played a lot more. This is Tony Finau's seventh Masters. Now, we just saw a little bit of form from him in Houston. He was struggling with the driver, and he made the driver change, and he drove it great. And he's
got a pretty decent history here, right?
Yeah, he finished top 10 in 2019, finished top 10, I think, in 2021. Huh. Now, he hasn't been very good in majors the last couple of years.
No.
But he's been hitting the ball really well, and he seems like he's got the driver in check. The putter continues to be an issue, but got success here, seventh Masters, come off a good finish at Houston where simulated Augusta conditions. That's not bad.
Nope.
And this is the seventh Masters for Xander Schauffele. People think cannot close tournaments, but he is hitting the ball really good.
Oh, no.
He has a second place finish here back in 2019. He probably could have won the 2021 tournament, which people think about in their head. People think he is a choke artist. People say, I'm only going to bet on positional. He is in his seventh Masters. I know.
Oh, man.
I know. This is good stuff, guys. Okay. And then you just, you know, eighth Masters, you're progressing a little bit. And then the best peak at Augusta is, according to Datagolf, your ninth Masters.
Okay.
And this is also another interesting list.
All right, come on, who got?
This is Justin Thomas's ninth Masters.
Wow.
Now, the iron play has been good.
He just fired his caddy.
Just fired the caddy.
Good.
Off that, he hasn't been good. I will say this. His statistical profile coming in kind of looks like how Hideki's was coming in, where Hideki was struggling.
Hideki wasn't playing that bad.
So Hideki didn't have a top 10 year. At least JT's got that.
Yeah.
Hideki was struggling with the putter. Hideki wasn't driving it all that great, but he was hitting his irons well. That's essentially what JT is doing. Okay. This is Shane Lowry's ninth Masters.
Okay.
Shane's been good the last couple Masters too. Finished top five in 2022. He finished, I think, T16 last year. Runner-up finish at Bay Hill. Fourth at Cognizant. Played okay at Players.
He's hitting the ball. God,
I know, but he's hitting the ball really, really well. Okay? And when I say this next name, this is going to really infuriate you. Okay.
Yeah.
This is Brooks Koepka's ninth Masters. I know. Because you are not liking what you're seeing in Miami. This was not what I hoped for coming into the week for him. I was hoping top five finish like he always does, and he's ready to go. Now I sit here thinking, all right, if I see him hit a lot of greens today, maybe I can buy into it. But this is, in my personal opinion, this is the only major that matters to him. And the only thing, I think this is the only thing that matters to Brooks going forward, is he proved himself last year. He can still win a major championship. He also knows in the back of his mind, his window is closing based on his injury history.
Age, yeah.
There is urgency to win a green jacket, the biggest pelt in all of golf for Brooks. Mm. And this is now, he is entering the prime peak, like the absolute apex of when you're expected to do best at Augusta. And he probably only has, I would say, maybe a 3 or 4 year window, and that would be it.
Cut.
Cut.
All right.
That's it. That is the experience, guys.
All right.
So, all right. Let's now talk about weather. Let's make this go away. Let's just get you and I. Okay. Yeah. So we don't need all that. So if you are somebody like me who loves to do scoring props, miscut props, and you just want to know in general just how the Masters plays, I have a encyclopedia of weather data and how each single day what the scoring averages were. And with Augusta National, it can play very differently based on the weather conditions. And there's four factors. You have temperature, you have average wind speed, you have the wind direction, which I'll pull up Google Earth in a little bit and show you how that actually impacts stuff, and humidity, basically the amount of moisture in the air that can go back into the greens. Let's talk about temperature first. There is a stark difference in scoring averages when it's warmer and comfortable and when it gets cold. So for the most part, over 70 degrees, relatively easy scoring conditions. You know, the average scoring, the average score is about 70, is like 72.7, 72.8 when it's over 70 degrees. Comfortable. The ball is going a little farther. Guys can get out there a little more. In weather that is under 70 degrees, the scoring average balloons up to 74.3. So about like a shot and a half harder. Now there's other variables in play. When it's colder, usually less humidity, it's drier, or there's a lot of wind, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But when the weather gets cold, expect scoring to go up because not only the ball is just completely dead, it plays impossibly long at that point. There's probably other factors in play that really make it really tough scoring conditions. Let's talk about the average wind speed. When it's not very windy, Augusta is very gettable. So in under, and this is ever since, how far back do I have this data? This goes back all the way to 2007. So when it's not windy, under 10 miles per hour average wind, the average score is about 72.5. A lot of birdies in play. 10 to 15 gets a little harder, but still manageable, 73.1. So plays about a stroke over par. When it gets to be 15 plus mile per hour winds, the average score goes up to 74.1. So plus 2 or more. So when you look at a weather forecast, if you see average wind 15 plus miles per hour, it's going to be tough sledding. Mm-hmm. The days where you see guys where there's not a lot of wind, that's where you got to capitalize. And I'll go over last year just because there's a stark difference between how the weekend played out and how the beginning played out based on some of this stuff. I'll go over that in a little bit. The average, the direction of the wind also is significantly important to how you score at this place. The easiest winds to play Augusta National or anytime it's from the east or the south is for a couple of reasons. One is some of the holes where it's east and south, you get more of a helping wind, specifically more towards the par fives and some of the par threes. And the scoring average is about 72.8 for those. So relatively manageable. When it's from the north and the west, though, it balloons up to about 73.6. And another reason why a north and a west wind is more difficult at Augusta National is I actually learned this from Brian Harman at the Players, or at Bay Hill, he's talking about this, is when you get an east and a south wind, that wind is mostly coming off the ocean. Now, it's a couple hundred miles inland, but it's still close enough to the ocean where an east and south wind brings more humidity and moisture in the air to the greens. The north and the west wind is a very dry wind. There's no moisture in the air, and Augusta National really dries out. So that is another reason why when you get west and north winds, it's so much more difficult to play at Augusta National because it just plays a lot firmer. Whereas an east and a south wind, it's still bringing a little more moisture to the golf course, at least in the air. And anytime you get a little moisture in these greens, it helps tremendously at Augusta National. And the last thing is humidity, which I'm just talking about, moisture in the air. So when the humidity is less than 50%, like really dry air, the average score is 74, going back to 2007. When it's between 50 and 60% average humidity, it goes to 73. And when it's really humid conditions, it goes to 72.5. So the more humid it is, the easier scoring conditions. And again, there's other variables in play. When it's more humid, generally speaking, it's a little hotter. So, and you'll get that east and south wind that's a little more helping. So I want to actually show you, at least with wind direction, let's pull this back up. And I specifically want to talk about the north and the west winds, how that and why it's so challenging. So the first hole here, so let me orient it where it's actually north and south. You're playing up to the northwest. In a west and north wind, you're playing into the wind. Number one is already a really difficult hole. This makes it a lot easier versus if the wind was this way, you got a helping wind. You can actually now carry this bunker a little bit. Right. On the second hole, it actually helps you, west and north wind, because it actually makes the whole play a little, you know, downwind. But you're playing into the wind from this direction. If the wind is going this way on three, this is a long par four or par three, into the wind for the most part, or into a crosswind, number four. Number five, while a north wind might help you a little bit, a westerly wind actually wants to push the ball towards these bunkers then and towards these trees. And if you miss way left, you're dead. Number six, either it plays in a crosswind or into the wind. And here's where it starts getting really tricky. Number eight, the par five, scoreable par five, plays uphill, plays into the wind. Or if it's a westerly wind, you want to try hit a draw around the corner here. You can't do it if the wind's coming this way. Yeah. You're bailing out. You're basically landing this way. If you play in a north or a west wind on number 11, while technically it could be a little bit of a tailwind, it's pushing everything towards the lake, the pond over here. Okay? So more penalty strokes to pile up. Number 12, you just don't want wind in general. You don't want a crosswind here. You don't want a north wind because it makes everything go long. It's a very shallow green. 13, if it's a north and a west wind, your tee shot is now into the wind. And if it's more for a westerly condition, you're now hitting into the wind on 13. This is when you see guys with now how long it plays, it's now not automatically a two-shot hole. If it's into the wind here, you're going to see a lot of guys lay up. That drives up the scoring averages. Same thing with 15. It's into the westerly wind here. This is now no longer a two-shot par five, guys. This is now a layup hole that's going to drive down your scoring opportunities and your birdie opportunities here. 16 in north wind plays into the wind. And then 18, a north wind. And I remember last year when they came back Saturday morning with the cold and rainy conditions, it was playing into a north wind. And poor Abe Anser hit his tee shot, I think, here. and he had a 3-wood in. I think the average score on Sunday morning, on Saturday morning, 18 was like 4.9. Everybody was
AD ejected that morning too.
He did. So that is why when you have north and west winds, it just changes this golf course from a scoring opportunity and just makes it so much more tougher versus an easterly or southerly wind definitely helps you a lot more. So why don't we look at the weather forecast this week? So this is, come on, load up, please. Okay. So heading into the Masters, not a lot of rain.
No.
Coming in. Thursday, though, something is brewing. Something is coming off the Gulf Coast, and it's going to bring some rain in the morning and a lot of wind the first 2 days. Now, somebody is probably going to look at this saying, well, you know, the waves, it probably doesn't matter all that much, you know. But what I just explained, the sophisticated mind, it's not going to be a huge edge. But these guys, Thursday morning, even though it's pretty a significant wind, it's going to come mostly from the south. In the afternoon, it's going to start turning to the west. That's dead. 25-mile-per-hour winds west here is dead. And then the same thing, they're going to get that on Friday morning with colder temperatures. Cold temperatures from the west with significant wind, death. So I actually look at this weather forecast. It's not. It's going to be really tough scoring conditions. It's not automatic.
Yeah.
But probably the guys going up Thursday morning will at least have the wind, an easier wind at their back.
For a couple.
And it's not quite as cold in the morning, and it's going to warm up a little more in the afternoon, and it's going to feel very comfortable with the sun. Like, this is Friday, us going.
Yeah, beautiful.
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 Saturday, beautiful. Yeah. And the wind starts to lay down.
Yeah.
And it starts to get a little warmer, too. It's going to be good scoring conditions over the weekend, but it's going to be really tough to get there. This is going to be a tough tournament to handicap, because we're going to see two very different types of Augustas play out.
Yeah.
A more benign one on Saturday, Sunday, but a very challenging one on Thursday and Friday. You know, and guys that might do better in benign conditions might not even make it to the weekend.
Make it.
Yeah. Or they're just so far back that it won't matter at this point. It's going to be a very interesting Masters. And that's kind of like what happened last year. And, you know, this is my last point about weather. I know I'm going a little long, but this is, you know, important stuff here. So last year we're about to go to the game. So we saw two different types of Masters. Last year it started off with 85-degree weather, and the average score was 72.4 until the tree fell on everybody.
Oh, yeah. How did we forget about that, by the way?
I know. So I actually looked at the wave splits. The guys went off Friday morning. Their average score is 72.5. Yeah. They came back the next morning in 25 mile per hour north winds. The average score is 74. Whew. And I went down to, and the temperature was 45 degrees. Or yeah, it was 45 degrees when they started. Yeah. Weren't about 65 then. And then the scoring average over the weekend was like 73.5 because it turned colder. The wind shifted more to the north. So that's my overall point. Okay. Let's now play the game.
When are the tea times going to come out?
I think sometime this week.
Oh, no shit.
Okay. All right. Let me get my little copy out.
All right.
And let's go play. Okay. Let's go. So what's good about the Masters is that it's played on the same golf course for years. We can see how guys are trending in. And what I did was I went back to 2010 and basically looked at how each guy was doing in every single category as far as tee to green coming in or off the tee coming in or approach play coming in. And I set minimums for winners of what they were doing. So every winner of the Masters since 2012 has gained at least 0.73 strokes tee to green heading in.
Okay.
There are 22 guys that have done that. Here are the names. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler, best player on the planet right now. John Rahm. Now, these are live stats. But based on how I'm crunching the numbers and what I'm looking at, based on the body work, I'm confident that he would be getting at least 0.73 strokes tee to green coming in. Rory McIlroy. Now, this is an interesting one. Up until this week, Rory actually was below the cut line. But through three rounds at Valero, I actually calculate he is now above the cut line.
Oh, so it really matters for him today.
So if he tanks today, he could be off this list.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Brooks, this was a difficult one because he is sucking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the first four tournaments and what I'm looking at, I think I can put him above the cut line.
Okay.
We're going Wyndham Clark, playing great. Yeah. No surprise there. Xander Schauffele, playing great. No surprise there. Joaquin Niemann, again, based on the body work on live and the numbers I'm looking at and crunching, I can say he would be above that cut line.
Is this his second Masters?
No, this is actually, I can look it up. I think this might be his fifth Masters. Yep, this is his fifth Masters.
Okay.
Let me get back to my sheet. That's okay.
Will Z.
He's hitting the ball really good. Even the last two tournaments where he sucked, it's been mostly the putter, he's hit the ball fine.
Yeah.
No concerns tee to green with him. Ludvig.
Yep.
Ludvig. Barely, although at the Valero, he actually boosted his numbers.
He's striping it.
Yeah, he's now comfortably inside the cut line. Hideki, no surprise.
No.
DJ, based on the body work of Liv, I can say he would be above this cut line at this point. Nope. JT is above the cut line because he's hitting his iron so good.
Yep.
So he is qualifying right now. Tony Finau, no surprise, hitting it great. Cam Young, he's been hitting it great this year, no surprise. Kyle Morikawa. This is another guy that actually was below the cut line. And then Valero. And this is surprising. He's driving the ball really well, and he's really good around the greens this week. That actually put him above the cut line this week.
Okay.
So you can throw him in there. Bryson, based on the body of work, no surprise. Oh. He would be on the, he would make the cut. Shane Lowry, hitting the ball great this year. No surprise. Tampa, but he'd be there. Sagala.
Definitely.
Hitting the ball great. No surprise there, too. Corey Connors, Mr. Ball Striker. Yep. He is there. Siwoo Kim, hitting the ball awesome.
Yeah.
Like can't putt. Really, really, really solid. A lot of really good top 20 finishes. Can't putt, but he's hitting the ball great. Stefan Jaeger. Jaeger makes it. He's above the cut line. And it's controversial, but based on what he's doing in Miami right now.
Okay.
Sergio.
Oh, all right.
So some of the notables we eliminated already. Victor Hovland, Cantlay, Spieth. I actually went back and recalculated Spieth stuff. He would not be making it. Cam Smith. I don't think he would be. He's not there right now with the ball striking.
Nope.
Max Homa. I went back and recalculated him. He's not above the cut right now. Sam Burns, Matt Fitzpatrick. Okay.
All right.
Well, now let's start eliminating guys. Okay.
Yep.
Every guy who has won the Masters since 2010 has been positive in strokes gain approach heading into the Masters. And I am happy to report this entire list would be positive in strokes gain approach.
Okay.
They're all hitting their irons great. Every winner of the Masters heading in since 2010 has been positive in strokes gain around the green. Let's start chopping, guys. Corey Connors, you're out. You are not positive around the green. Sahith Sagala, surprisingly, is struggling around the green this year, even though he tends to be pretty good in that category.
Okay.
He is now out. Bryson, based on what he's doing on LIV, I don't think he'd be getting strokes around the green.
Yep.
He is out. Sadly, I was really hoping I could make a case for Bryson. He's been driving the ball great, but I can't. Cam Young has been terrible around the green this year.
Yep.
Might do well, but for the purposes of this game, he is out.
Yep.
Based on the body of work I've seen on LIV, I can eliminate DJ.
Okay.
DJ just isn't as good anymore.
Yeah.
It seems like he's not as sharp. Okay. He could do well, but I'm not there. Ludvig, coming into this week, he was above the cut line, but he has been terrible around the green this week, and currently he would be below it.
Okay.
He is out. Will Zalatoris currently is not positive in strokes gained around the green. He is out.
Okay.
Based on the body of work, Joaquin Niemann is not quite as good around the green. He's not where he needs to be. He's better than what he used to be, but he's not there.
All right.
And Rory, even with this week,
really
is not positive in strokes gained around the green coming in.
Interesting.
Yes, he's actually been pretty bad in that
game. I can't believe Colin Morikawa is still there around the green.
Colin is actually gaining, and I bake this in, he's gaining 0.3 strokes around the green this year. He's actually been pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's surprising. Okay. Now, I'm cheating a little bit with this next one, because technically Hideki was losing 0.01 strokes with the driver. But for the purposes of this game, that's pretty immaterial.
Right.
Nobody has been losing strokes with the driver heading into Augusta National. And we have, let me get the numbers out of here. It's just distracting at this point. We have 13 players. And for those listening to the podcast, we have Scotty, John Rahm, Koepka, Wyndham Clark, Xander, Hideki, JT, Finau, Morikawa, Shane Lowry, Siwoo Kim, Stefan Jaeger, and Sergio still left in this game. I am happy to report that based on the stats available and what I'm seeing, everybody would be gaining in.
Okay.
No one would be negative and off the tee, even JT.
All right.
He is barely hanging on.
Amen.
Like the kitty hanging off the fence there, but he is hanging on. Okay. Now we're going to get into, we're going to really start weeding stuff out. No Masters champion since 2010 has been gaining fewer than 0.23 strokes with their irons heading in. We're going to eliminate Stefan Jaeger.
Okay.
Yeah. He's been good, but he doesn't do it with his iron shots. Here's the thing. Remember I mentioned with Morikawa, he'd been driving it really good and not hitting the pretty good rating. He's not hitting his irons all that good.
Okay.
Currently, as I sit here,
interesting,
Colin is below the threshold. But with a good day today,
he could
get back in. Things haven't been as bad for Morikawa as I thought they were.
Okay.
Especially their on arena stuff. Okay. We are now left with 11 players. No Masters champion has been gaining fewer than 0.12 strokes around the green heading in. Wyndham Clark, we are going to eliminate you. First timer. You made it pretty far in the game, though.
Yeah.
So now we are down to 10. Scotty, spoiler, he's going to make it to the end. That's no surprise. Yeah. John Rahm, Koepka, Xander, Hideki Matsuyama, JT is still kicking. Tony Finau, okay. Shane Lowry, Siwoo Kim, and Sergio. Now, I think Sergio's numbers are really going to help him once I bake into Miami stuff, as long as he doesn't collapse today. Okay. Now let's take iron play and around the green game, probably the most important metrics I consider at Augusta National. Nobody has been gaining fewer than 0.62 strokes with their irons and around the green combined than, and still end up winning since 2010. I'm happy to report this last 10 here comfortably meets the threshold. They're all way above it. The worst guy actually is Siwoo at 0.87 combined. Everybody else is at one or above. At least what I'm measuring. Yeah. Okay. So now we kind of ran out of like stat stuff. Let's go to like more how you do in majors, form coming in, etc. Okay. Every winner of the Masters since 2010 has had a top 10 in a major before.
Okay.
Siwoo, you're out.
Siwoo's
out.
Yeah.
That would be a surprise, but I do think Siwoo's going to play really good. I really like his form coming in.
Okay.
Okay. Every winner of the Masters has won at least once in the last 2 years. Corn Ferry excluded. Today's a big day for Sergio.
Okay. Because if he closes,
he stays on the list.
Okay.
Currently, right now, Sergio has not won in at least 2 calendar years.
Okay.
So he's out. We're almost done, by the way. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, I know.
I kind of ran out of, because we got a lot of guys up. You know, we got 8 guys left.
Yeah.
I kind of ran out of stuff, so I had to start really drill into this stuff.
Okay? All right.
All right. 10 of the last 12 Masters winners was at least top 15 in a major the prior year.
Okay.
JT, you are out. Okay. You missed like 5 cuts last year. And Finau has not been very good in majors recently.
Yep.
This is kind of a ticky-tack one. It's only 10 out of 12, but if I'm really trying to drill down this list, they haven't been good in majors recently.
No.
They're out. Okay. 10 of the last 12 winners of the Masters have had at least a top 5 this year. In the calendar year, they end up winning. I'm happy to report everybody on this list has a top 5. Even Brooks. Brooks finished T5 at Mayakoba, so he's there.
Yep.
Okay. This is the last one.
Okay.
Every Masters winner has had multiple top 20 finishes in one of their last 5 starts heading into the Masters. So for this one, we're only going to do top 10 for Liv.
Okay.
That's, weaker fields, not as deep.
Yep.
This is where we get rid of Brooks.
Okay.
The form just hasn't been in there. I really need to see what we usually see out of Brooks.
Yeah.
We didn't get it. We're going to end the game right here. Okay. I don't think I can drill down a lot of these stuff. So Scotty, obviously. John Rahm.
No one's ever went back to back though, right?
No one's ever went back to back. But Xander has survived.
Yep.
Hideki has survived. and Shane Lowry survived.
All right.
So
it's a good list.
It's a good list. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to feel like a donkey, but the seventh Masters, Masters, and the fact that people think he can't win really makes me want to just bet Xander. Because I at this point, I have decided I'm not single bullying Scotty. I'm just not going to do it.
No, me either.
It kind of is what it is. Although the more I think about this, though, the windy conditions the first 2 days terrifies me to back Xander. So maybe I won't do that.
Okay.
But I have a feeling I'm definitely betting Hideki. I don't know if
I don't know if I was going to drift.
Yeah, I don't know
if he's playing too well.
I know. I don't know if I can get there with Lowry for an outright.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to play really good. And this is ninth Masters. Other than that, though, I don't really know what the rest of my card is going to be. So that's it. I got nothing else. That's the end of the game.
Xander, God damn it.
Well, the wind is very concerning. The weather
actually helps Lowry's case.
It does help Lowry's case. I was hoping with Xander, why I was so pumped about betting Xander was up until a couple days ago, it looked like no wind through the entire Masters.
I know, at all. Yeah.
And that Thursday, Friday forecast now absolutely terrifies me with him to the point where I don't think I want to bet him.
Okay.
If it stays like that. But if it changes, I'm back in.
All right. Okay. Well, good shit. We got Tuesday with Andy.
Yes, we do.
And then we're trying to figure out a time with Pamela. I've got a doctor's appointment Wednesday morning that I forgot about. So we'll talk offline.
Yeah, we're gonna have to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure out how to get Pamela on. Okay. And then go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/masters to go enter to win that Spider X putter. Matt's got the DFS show tomorrow night. Fucking Masters week, man. We're going to be there. I'm so pumped. Pumped for the show on Tuesday. Going to have a deep betting card because this is our Super Bowl for betting. So fun. So, yeah, other than that, follow me on Twitter at Boston_Capper. Go check out Steve in the Discord. And other than that, we will see you guys on Tuesday. Later.